7:15 p.m. West Pakistan time, that is 8:15 p.m. East Pakistan time. Radio Pakistan. The President, Mr. Zia-ul-Haq Bhutto, gave an interview to a representative of the BBC, which was broadcast in their world service. We now bring you a recording of that interview, recorded direct from BBC.
President of Pakistan, Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, has now been in power for 2 months. Taking over his country in the aftermath of a disastrous war with India and the loss of the eastern wing of the country, President Bhutto has had enormous problems to face up to. This week in Rawalpindi, he gave an exclusive interview to Ian McIntyre of the BBC. First, McIntyre reminded the President of his book, A Myth of Independence, in which he had said that relations between India and Pakistan had never been normal, nor were they capable of being normal without the settlement of fundamental disputes, which have smouldered since independence. What, McIntyre asked, are these disputes?
Basically, it was Kashmir. Kashmir still remains a basic dispute, but since this last war, the relationship between India and Pakistan has acquired wider dimensions to include the majority part of our country, which is under Indian occupation. These are the two fundamental disputes now facing the two countries.
You also said in the book, I think, that Indian leaders have come to tolerate Pakistan because they don't have the power to destroy her. And if they could forge this power, they'd end partition and reabsorb Pakistan into the India of their dreams. Do you think that's still so?
I'm afraid events have proved its validity. At that time, there was some perverse balance of power. India never was a genuine balance of power, but nevertheless, some kind of a balance of power between India and Pakistan. But since the Sino-Indian conflict of 1962, slowly, and then after the 65 conflict between India and Pakistan, the military preponderance of India has weighed heavily against Pakistan's military forces.
If this was, however, still a fundamental aim of Indian policy, couldn't they have finished the job last time?
Yes, they might have, and I think they intended to. But the world situation was there, and the world powers took an active attitude towards the conflict finally. And the United States put her foot down. And so India declared a unilateral ceasefire. I don't think it was a voluntary declaration.
There has been a little controversy about the nature of this evidence. You'll have seen President Nixon's statement of foreign policy, and this paragraph in it about the situation we're talking about. During the week of December the 6th, he writes, we received convincing evidence that India was seriously contemplating the seizure of Pakistan-held portions of Kashmir and the destruction of Pakistan's military forces in the West. Now, questioned about this, subsequently, both Mr. Nixon and Dr. Kissinger have said that they don't wish to disclose the nature of that evidence. Do you think that evidence was good?
I can understand their reluctance to disclose the nature of that evidence because at present it's extremely sensitive evidence, and it might also affect the United States' relations with the Soviet Union, and I don't think the United States would now, in the circumstances as we face, because there is a ceasefire, for them to unnecessarily aggravate their relations with the Soviet Union, especially when President Nixon is going both to China and to Moscow. So I think that there is good reason for him not to disclose the information at this given point of time. But we also have some evidence of this, and this was also told to me by Premier Zhou Enlai when I visited Peking this month.
When you were in China last November, you were the guest of honor at a banquet, and in the course of his speech, the acting foreign minister had this to say: should Pakistan be subjected to foreign aggression, the Chinese government and people will, as always, resolutely support the Pakistan government in their just struggle to defend their state sovereignty and national independence. Would you agree that Chinese support in the recent conflict with India fell some way short of that?
That's behind us now, but I would say that within the limitations, China did what she could. Some people think China could have done more, but I think that you have to take a number of factors into account in assessing China's role in the last conflict. And a series of successive blunders were committed by the Yahya regime. Events moved so fast that other countries did not have time to fully assess them. We have to take all these factors into account. And as I said, that's now a past event. We have to look to the future. But whatever has been China's participation, we have not lost confidence in China's friendship or in China's word.
When the idea of separation was first seriously mooted at the end of 1970, after Mujib's election victory, you said you were too passionately committed to the concept of Pakistan to think of such an idea. Well, the idea has now, of course, been rather forcibly brought to your attention, and has indeed become a political reality. Do you intend to spend any time trying to undo it?
Well, I still maintain that Pakistan and its concept are not really passing phenomena, and that the present reality might not be a permanent reality. And so far, we are trying to make a search, a genuine search, to maintain some form of modus vivendi between the two wings. Sooner or later, the sentiments for Pakistan will grow again, but that's for another day. At the moment, we still are making a search. For this reason, in the field of external affairs, we have had to painfully and regrettably leave the Commonwealth on this account, and also break relations with certain countries. But even if there is parting of the ways, I think it will not be a permanent parting of the ways. The two of us will come together again in some form or shape. I cannot say what that form or shape will be, but you will see yourself that sentiment for Pakistan will again grow in that part of the country.
Given that something like 1 in 3 of the entire United Nations membership has now recognized Bangladesh, isn't there something to be said for the view that until you do too, you aren't going to be able to give your full attention to the daunting tasks of reconstruction facing you here?
I think you might have noted that I've shown my anxiety and my willingness to hold negotiations with Sheikh Mujib Rahman on the one hand, and with the government of India on another. And until we hold these discussions, I don't think it would be fair to us to ask us for our final position.
During the final months of your predecessor's rule, one of your most insistent demands was for the restoration of democratic processes. What will the main features in such a restoration be? And what sort of timescale do you envisage?
When I made this demand, the war had not taken place. And half of our country had not come under the occupation of India. So now also, I believe in my demand, and I will see to it that people of Pakistan return to democracy soon. And I'd like to see that they return to democracy for all times, so that we establish institutions with roots, and that no military or civilian adventurer will ever dare to inject one martial law after another into our country again. I want to build institutions, strengthen existing institutions. And when I say existing institutions, I think the only one really that remains is the judiciary, unfortunately. So this is the institution we can strengthen. The remaining ones we'll have to build again. We want a constitution, and we want to have the rule of law restored in the country. We want to have freedom of press, freedom of association, fundamental rights, and a viable constitution suited to our conditions.
You've been asked many times since you became president how long you intend to retain martial law. You said very shortly after you became president, not a day longer, not a minute longer, not a second longer than necessary. How much longer do you think, in fact, you are going to need it?
I stand by that commitment, and I believe in it. I want to withdraw martial law. I'm not happy with martial law. I would like to see it gone by yesterday. But the point is that not only have certain basic reforms to be implemented, but I must have at least one meeting with the Indian leaders and one with Sheikh Mujib Rahman to get a general idea of the situation, to get some idea of the general picture. Now, I know that by dialogue alone, what they say, I won't get an exact idea. But a politician makes an assessment not only on the words spoken, but on the general feel. And I want to have that general feel, and I think the world should be fair to me to get that general feel before I can give a timetable. Because I think very few countries have gone through a crisis that my country has gone through. I don't think even Poland, which was dismembered rather badly, went through a crisis as deep as Pakistan is going through. So I'm not trying to procrastinate. I know the dangers of procrastination. I'm not so foolish as to try and hang on to power by the threat of martial law. I'd like to be in a position of respectable responsibility. And that can only come with a constitution. And I've earned that right in an election. So I am anxious and eager to withdraw it. But I must have, to be fair to my people, to be fair to what remains of my country at the moment, to have some idea of the general situation before I can announce a date.
You've always taken a very hard line against India. In 1965, when relations were particularly bad over Kashmir, you called her a feeble, flippant, decadent society. Yes. And when you were out electioneering, before the last elections here, you promised in the main two things: a redistribution of wealth and a thousand-year war against India. How important is it to you to be able to work out some sort of modus vivendi with India?
That's important. Even when my posture was different, when I was preaching confrontation, there was a theme in that confrontation. That was, confrontation would be inevitable until the fundamental disputes are settled. Now, after this war, the fundamental disputes have still to be settled, if not by confrontation, by consultation and by negotiations. An imposed peace will simply not work. So really, only the situation has changed, but it has changed radically. In those days, we had certain opportunities, and our governments missed them. Now, India thought she had an opportunity, and she didn't miss it. For instance, in 1962, during the Sino-Indian conflict, when India had vacated most of her forces from Kashmir, our armies could have walked into Kashmir. But then Ayub thought, and he was told by others, that, oh, the world will say it will be a stab in the back. Now, what has India done to Pakistan? Has it been a stab in the back, or has it been a stab in the front? But nevertheless, whether it's in the back or in the front, it's been a mighty stab. But the world tends to, with the passage of time, forget these things. So in 1962, there was an opportunity. In 1965, I think, if the war had continued, there would have been a better settlement. Well, Pakistan missed her opportunities. India has not missed her opportunities, so she thinks. So I can't be held responsible. Other governments have missed their opportunities. I was only able to tell them, this is an opportunity. Either you take it, or if you don't take it, then you will finally suffer. And we have come to that position where we finally suffer. It depends how you go to the peace table.
When you do go to the conference table, will you talk only about the recent conflict, or would you hope to cover all outstanding issues?
I'd like to leave that out for the moment, because I'd like to see their mood. I'd like to see in what frame of mind they are. This is what I said earlier. It's not exactly what we say, but the general impression one gathers. And first I'd like to see that general impression. And after that, I'll be in a better position to know.
You have just heard an interview with the President, Mr. Zede Bhutto, which he recently gave to a representative of the BBC, which was broadcast in their world service. And with that, Radio Pakistan closes its national hookup.